I try to put it into like 30 minutes so that we have some time for discussion and a second talk by Walter. In fact, what I'm talking about is work in collaboration with Volker Meden, Walter Metzner, Uli Scholweg, Göttingen, Stuttgart, and some work in progress by Sabine Andergassen also in Stuttgart. So it's kind of an application of what we heard yesterday, and I will start with a short motivation of why we are doing this, and then I spend some time on a toy model, which is just a scattering of a single particle in a long-range potential, which is probably a bit unfamiliar to most of the people. Then we'll see that this kind of partially solves the problem, but then to really understand what's going on, you have to do a randomization group calculation, and the results I show are for a model of spinless fermions in 1D, presently also work for models including spin is underway, and I end with a summary. So let me start with a motivation and just write the following problem. These days everybody talks about molecular electronics and maybe using carbon nanotubes. It's not so sure, yeah, but a lot of people talk about it. And the question is, how would you calculate transport through nanotubes containing impurities or even simply bending the nanotubes, which more or less act like an impurity? And the question is, do we really, workshop is called realistic theories, do we need both camps to contribute to this, to the answer to the question? And I recently had to review a proposal by somebody who wanted to solve this problem from the ab initio camp by doing an LDA calculation and then using the Landauer-Bütikofer formulation to get the transport. In this proposal, there was no mentioning of strongly correlated electrons, or even the word Luttinger liquid never showed up. The people of the other camp would say Matthew isn't even here because he probably believes the problem is solved. People from the other community would say, yeah, okay, this is, if you don't go to extremely low temperatures, it will be Luttinger liquid physics. So Kane and Fisher have told us what happens when we put an impurity in a 1D system. So the question is, what should one really do if one wants to understand the problem in a realistic sense? So let me shortly explain to you what this Kane and Fisher scenario is. What they did is they take a Tominaga-Luttinger model and put in a single impurity, a delta impurity of strength V0, and then they mapped the bosonization and mapped the problem to a local Sein-Gordon model, and then used methods which were invented or first used by Zwerger and Fisher to treat a somewhat different problem. And what they find out in their RG, which is perturbational in impurity strengths, that for small V that they run to strong coupling for repulsive two-body interaction, and it looks as if an arbitrarily weak impurity cuts the Luttinger liquid in two halves. They also looked at the other extreme limit of having two Luttinger liquids coupled weakly by a weak hopping, and found that in RG calculation that this hopping scales to zero. The quantities one can look at to see this low energy physics phenomena is either look at the conductance, which vanishes with temperature when you have the single impurity in there. And what enters is the Luttinger liquid parameter K rho. Essentially what enters is the boundary exponent. So you could either look at the conductance as a function of temperature, or what you could do is you look at the spectral function close to an impurity, and if this is really like cutting it in half, you should get a suppression not with a bulk anomalous dimension, but with a boundary anomalous dimension, which is just given by this expression here. And there are various claims of experimental verification. This transparency is more than a year also, so there are some new experimental papers which I have listed here. What we wanted to do is to do a calculation which is weak coupling in the sense of yesterday in the two-body interaction, but which is non-perturbative in the impurity strings, so that we can really look what happens for arbitrary impurity strings. And also, we wanted to have a simple, intuitive picture. Okay, so we want to take a model of interacting electrons in one dimension, and we started with the most simple one, which is the model of spinless fermions with nearest neighbor hopping, an impurity, and a neighboring site Coulomb interaction. We call it U, usually in the extended Hubbard model, usually people call it V, and U is the on-site energy, but because of our potential is V, we prefer to call it U. So don't be confused. U is our interaction between, Coulomb interaction between two electrons on nearest neighbor sites. Okay, so I said there was this proposal to do the calculation in LDA. I will just here look at as a similar, maybe naive approach to try to see if one can catch some of the physics if you start with a Hartree-Fock calculation. This might sound surprising because if you go to the bulk system and do Hartree-Fock, you don't catch any of the Luttinger liquid features. You have at least to go to second order self-energy to see some logarithms coming in and then to get power loss. It's a bit different with the boundary physics and the impurity physics. So if you put in an impurity, you get a change in your Hartree and in your Fock potential, and I've just shown you here the change in the Hartree potential. It's just given by this diagram, and if you go rather far away from your impurity, you get a Hartree potential which is proportional to the change of the density due to the impurity. This is calculated because this is first order for non-interacting electrons, and then you know that the change of the density near an impurity in the non-interacting calculation is just the Friedel oscillation, which decays like 1 over x and has this oscillatory factor with 2k of x. Okay, so if you wanted to do a Hartree-Fock calculation or an LDA type calculation, what you would get is your impurity potential plus a additional long-range oscillatory potential. So, and then you could look at, take this potential and calculate its transport, its scattering amplitudes, or, for example, look at the local density of states near the impurity itself. And because maybe the scattering in such a long-range potential isn't so well known, I will just talk a little bit about a very simple model of a single particle scattering from such a long-range potential. So we take one-dimensional system, nearest neighbor hopping, sets the energy scale, and then we put in some potential. We could also put in, as we'll see in the RG calculation later, could put in some change of the hoppings, but to start with, I just take a on-site potential. So we take a local on-site potential plus an oscillatory potential which decays with distance, we take these two as independent parameters in this Hartree-Fock calculation. They would be related, but just to see what happens, we take them as independent parameters. And I will mostly look at the case where this beta, the exponent, is 1, which was the situation we would get in a Hartree-Fock calculation. So then we cut the potential out to some finite range just to do the analytic calculation and the numerical calculation. And I also take a half-filled band case so that the scattering anomaly then later will happen at the center of the band. And the quantities one could calculate, as I said before, is either the transmission amplitude through the potential or the local density of states near the impurity. The calculation is very easy numerical, but there can be a lot of analytical things be done, and I just show you a few results. So this is the local density of states next to the impurity site. And as I told you, you get a suppression right in the center of the band. What I show here is two different values of the local strength. Is the long range potential is always the same, and then here I've also changed the exponent. So you see, you get, if I enlarge this down here, you get a suppression, which almost for beta equals 1, for the 1 over x times oscillatory, which already almost looks like a power law. We'll discuss it later. If you have it a slower decay, you get a much larger suppression of spectral weight, which is kind of obvious. If you would go with a beta to 0, it doesn't decay at all, and the chain is infinitely long, then you have an AB chain, which has a gap in the center of the band. So in lowering the beta, you more and more suppress the spectral weight. If you start to zoom in further, you will see that for larger and larger systems, if you look at a very small energy scale, you recover your power law decrease. And if you look how the value at energy equals 0 scales with 1 over the size of the long-range potential, you find very nice power loss. And so these are beautiful straight lines. These are for different values of this local impurity site. You see the exponent is given by the strength of this oscillatory part, independent of the value of V0, and this can be shown also analytically. Okay, so we get this power law suppression for the density of states. Now you could either look at this finite size scaling for the density of states, or you really look at it as a function of energy, and you get the same exponent. It's a bit easier to work with this finite size scaling, which we also use later in this RG calculation. The smaller the strength of this oscillatory part is, the longer it takes really, and the larger systems you really have to take to really see this nice straight line. And there's a correction which again goes in a power law fashion. Okay, then you can look at the transport and the transmission amplitude as a function of energy shows this suppression at energy 0, so which is this later cutting of the chain, so you get no transmission if the system is large. Here again we have different V0s, so the overall thing strongly depends on the value of V0, but the exponent does not, and the exponent is the same, the log of this transmission amplitude and the log the power law for the density of states is the same. This can also be shown analytically. Okay, but I told you this the approach can be rather slow, and we'll recover this in the RG calculation. And the reason is the following. If you do some fine tuning of this parameter V0, for every V0, generically, if you increase the size of your system and you look at the transmission amplitude at energy equals zero, it goes to zero. But there is a special value of V0 which you can get by fine tuning, that you get a transmission resonance. So the generic behavior is this power law, but you have this very special point. So it's obvious that if you're too close with your parameters to this one special point, the approach of the asymptotic law is very slow. That sounds very strange. What happens here, and what happens here, has been in a way already realized by the old fathers of quantum mechanics. There's an old paper by John von Neumann and Eugene Wigner, Über merkwürdige diskrete Eigenwerte, about strange discrete eigenvalues. They just wanted to show that this is the textbook example. So you, this is your continuum, and these are your bound states which you get. But then he showed that you can really construct potentials such that you really have a true bound state normalizable wave function in the continuum. And they did this by simply constructing examples. And here are some examples. You kind of don't solve the Schrödinger equation, but kind of make a guess for the wave function and look at the potential. So it's kind of solving Schrödinger equations in reverse. So they take S wave in three dimensions, but it's almost the same as the one dimensional example I showed you. So then you would have your sine function without the potential. Then you take something which is normalizable, and then you calculate your potential. Then you have to be a bit careful that the zeros which you have here are excluded, and this makes the calculation a bit tricky. So there's one example of this potential which looks for the small distances rather funny. Out here, it is simply a sine 2kr over r potential, as I was discussing all the time. So this kind of weird phenomena, which kind of kicks up in our physics, has been known for a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Even the set of potential that have this property, set of measure zero among other potentials.
Yeah. It is just fine-tuning. Yeah, exactly in this example I had before. So it's on in a lower dimensional manifold than the thing you start with. Okay, so this makes me summarize my second point with this toy model. I said if you do a Hartree-Fock type calculation or an LDA type calculation, you will always end up solving a one particle problem in an effective potential, so you will end up with exactly this type of problem I just mentioned. So the attempt to verify Kane and Fisher within Hartree-Fock or LDA is in one respect successful, that it really produces power loss in the local density of states and... Yeah, but if you go to this lattice situation and go far out, it becomes essentially local. I had this expression that for large distances, it essentially gets local. Could we discuss that maybe later? I have to look at my notes. It's some time since I did the calculation. The exponent, on the other hand, depends explicitly not only on the value of the Coulomb interaction, the density of in the band, but it also depends on the strength of the impurity potential, while Kane and Fisher say, okay, it does not depend on the impurity strength. So this power law suppression of the density of states or the transmission amplitude, the exponent is independent of the potential, as weak as it might be.
Is
Yes.
And can you show analytically, which is the result of the numerical calculation?
I can show it analytically, yeah. I have to admit, it has the Coulomb interaction has to be positive. If it's negative, there's something strange happens. So, which does not occur in the RG calculation later. Okay, so we have to do better, and then we finally come to the point where we quit yesterday. So we kind of need this flow to strong potentials. I made the quotations here because in the fact. It's not that this V0 goes to infinity, but this long-range potential does all the physics. And we are using exact functional RG technique. So there are kind of three, the Polchinski version, and then this, which I call the Salmhofer version, which is the Polchinski with Wick-ordered functions. And then the one we heard yesterday, the one-particle irreducible, which was invented by Wetterich and about shortly later, also by Morris. Okay, let me shortly flash, because some redundancy might be useful. These formulas were essentially on the blackboard yesterday. You could either do it in Grassmann variables. I have written it down that you could also tell it a student in a statistical mechanics course. So you look at the generator of the connected Green's function, and we have this external field, and we have an interaction term, and then we have the free term, which depends on some parameter. And then what we do, what one does, goes to the Legendre transform version, that defines this new field phi, and then defines this vertex function, which we, in contrast to yesterday, I've subtracted, and that has, as we do have written it up, we subtracted this three terms of the inverse of the G2 is not the Green's function, but the inverse of the Green's function, but the self-energy. Okay, and then as shortly explained yesterday, just by using the differentiation, first you do it with this guy, and then it's easy to go from here to the. Once you know this second derivative, you can do it here. So then, essentially, what you get is that the derivative of this gamma with respect to this arbitrary parameter so far gives you the derivative of this beast here, and then comes in the second derivatives of this gamma. So this is, in principle, an exact flow equation, and the initial condition is that if you have your C of alpha, some alpha 0 to be 0, then this gamma is just the interacting interaction you started with, and then you have to integrate your equation to the value you want to get to. And so you want, if the C of alpha 1 corresponds to the free propagator of the system to be studied, so then we have to get this quantity here, and then we have to, in principle, solve this differential equation, and if V is even, as discussed yesterday, then you kind of make an expansion in terms of the phis, and then you get this hierarchy. You simply compare, put this in the equation I showed you, and simply compare order for order. And somehow some people call this, let's say, renormalization group enhanced perturbation theory. So we also work on the level discussed yesterday. So in this hierarchy, the 6-point vertex is put to zero, the one particle irreducible. So we have these types of equations. So this is now the self-energy, the way we have defined it. Then we want to use this type of approximation to solve our problem. Okay, now again we go to the spinless fermions on this one-dimensional chain, and the results I show you here are for half-filling. Now there are also results for other fillings, at half filling, this system is a Luttinger liquid as long as the U is between minus 2 and plus 2. We will be perturbative in U, but this boundary exponent starts linear in U. So if we want to get this kind of Fisher physics with the boundary exponent at least correct to linear order, then we even can, for the spinless case, forget the second equation. If one includes spin, then certainly one has this non-trivial flow, which the Luttinger liquid experts certainly know. But here I mainly show you the results for this most simple spinless model, where we just replace the gamma by the anti-symmetrized bare vertex. Okay, so the improvements are in the making, and there are. I also even show results in the end. So then the question is, how do you cut off? This was the main equation we had yesterday. So you have your kind of free propagator, and you kind of have to invent some cutoff procedure. And the cutoff procedure we used here was in momentum, in frequency space, because this turns out to make the form of the equation extremely simple. You know, here we had this line which was cut, which was explained yesterday by Manfred Solmhof. Okay, so when we do that, we can write down the flow equations for the self-energy. If we do that, the self-energy is frequency independent because of the summation. But it's non-local and inhomogeneous in space. So it has only diagonal elements and next off-diagonal elements. But this is the exact flow equation under these approximations. I should mention that there was one paper by Matveev and Glassman in the early 90s who kind of tried a similar philosophy, but in addition to making the approximation I gave you up to here, made various additional approximations which cannot really be justified. Okay, so we have this set of differential equations. The Green's functions are the full Green's functions which contain the self-energy in the denominator in an operator sense. So to calculate the right-hand side, we always have to invert large matrices. If the impurity is initially small, then you can analytically go to K-space and analytically solve these equations. And what you find is that the self-energy, the matrix element from Kf to minus Kf, has exactly the same power law behavior as predicted by Kane and Fisher, which tells us that in this approximation, this Kane and Fisher scenario is kind of recovered. But it's kind of obvious to most people probably that if you have a really weak impurity, then it certainly would take a very, very long system until you really flow to this physics with this exponent which does not depend on the initial strength. So what we have done is we have studied finite systems with open boundary conditions. We've done the RG calculation because these are done on a tri-diagonal matrices. You can easily go to very large systems. So this is the size of the RG calculation we have done. We have compared this to DMRG calculation. In what sense, I explain you in a moment. And we have also done calculations where we put in leads and contacts, but these results are not yet published. And as I kind of indicated in my introduction, what you get is a self-energy. So you put your impurity somewhere here, is here in your sample. This is a sample of 10 of 1,025 sites. So you have your imperator here, and your self-energy has this long-range oscillatory behavior, as I discussed in the introduction in the toy model, and also the hopping has a long-range dependence. And if with this effective frequency-independent self-energy, you calculate your local density of states, while this is the one for the non-interacting situation, you get this power law suppression. Because your system isn't very large, it doesn't really go all the way to zero, but at least you kind of see what's going on. So, here our result for a site impurity, and I want, again, you see this diagonal and off-diagonal hopping part, but the first thing to realize is that the strengths of your local potential only mildly renormalizes, so it just changes a little bit. So the when you have flown to the your lambda all the way to zero, the local potential just gets a finite renormalization. While if you look in momentum space and look at the Kf minus Kf matrix element of the self-energy, this diverges when n goes to zero. So it's really this long-range potential which does the physics, and not like one might naively think that the strength of the local impurity itself goes to infinity. Okay, so what have we calculated? We have, in the comparison with the DMRG, if we take a finite system, then we had looked at the finite size scaling of the peak right at the Fermi level. And the DMRG, then you have to do two ground state calculations, one with n electrons and one with n minus one electrons, and simply calculate the matrix element as it appears in the Lehmann representation. So you have this many-body matrix element. Okay, again, what is a bit counterintuitive, we also have looked at the site impurity case. So we start with a site with a hopping impurity, so a weak link between two Luttinger liquids, 0.1 compared to 1. And then in this picture, I said it before, as done by Kane and Fisher, naively one would have said, okay, the T prime goes to 0. In the scheme as it's done here, this weak hopping even slightly increases, and all the low energy anomalies are again responsible are done by this long range hopping and long range on site imperative behavior. So, and the surprising thing, or maybe not so surprising thing, is now I show you results for U equals 0.5, and in the beginning we kind of had some, started with small system sizes. So this is the boundary exponent, roughly 0.6, for which you can get from beta ansatz. And then the results for a weak impurity, say the hopping strength, the impurity, site impurity of strength 1. And then, you know, we looked at effective exponents, in simply making the system larger and larger. So we look at exponents, effective exponents as a function of system size. And the statement was that this, the full line is, that the dots are the DMRG, and this is the renormalization group calculation, that this should go to this value. And so in the beginning we were kind of really surprised, but then made the systems larger and larger, and in the end the DMRG certainly stopped, because the DMRG cannot be done for systems larger than, say, than 1,000 sites. So here you really don't really see it, but here you could kind of guess that if you make your system long enough, large enough, you really end up at the boundary exponent. The agreement between the DMRG results and the RG result improve enormously when really the flow of the U is included, so that the exponent is recovered to order U squared. Maybe I don't, because I'm a bit over time, don't go in all detail in these figures, but simply summarize the following way, that the experimental verification of this asymptotic boundary physics in transport in Luttinger liquids requires very long chains. So in a way, maybe these local density people are lucky that nothing really much happens, because when the chains are too short, and then their calculation is quite trustworthy. If they are really long, and then certainly this Kane and Fisher scenario takes over, and so there's no contradiction. But in a way, is a maybe a nice example that it's good to have a workshop like this, where people from both camps come together and decide on how one really would do things. So in a way, if you really would do the calculation for a carbon nanotube, you'd have to include spin, and you have to include the fact that in principle we have two points in the Brillouin zone which you have to take into account, so it's more like a system of two coupled chains. But I think we'll hope to get to the more realistic physics in our way, and I don't know what's going on the other side. I think there's a large group at IBM in Yorktown Heights doing these LDA type calculation on nanotubes. So maybe this is a type of system that really in the end it will be decided if this kind of many body physics is really important for the real life or not. Okay, and if you map the problem in the Kane and Fisher way to this local Sein-Gordon model, you kind of lose the physical insight what's going on the electron side of the physics. So in a way, I think it's kind of nice that we see that is the long-range oscillatory potentials which do all this strange and weird physics. Thank you very much. We compared with the exact solution for the where value of the boundary exponent, but there is, not to my knowledge, is there's an exact solution related to one particle spectral functions with an impurity.
Well, for example, the conductance can be calculated, linear and
non-linear. Has it been done for? As a function, really, for finite system sizes, or is this just infinite?
Well, the conductance at finite temperature, for example, is zero by.
Yeah. Would be probably you just to take the T and to replace it by 1 over L. And
well, yeah. You can do it in the exact function. Yeah, but it's good. There, it's right there.
No.
But the conductance is on the way, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could you maybe just for a second again put this quantitative comparison of the MRG and the RG? I think it's really remarkable how well the RG does as a quantitative job on the basis of scales as compared to the exact MRG or something. So the closed symbols would be on the MRG and the open ones on the RG, even for intermediate coupling strings.
Gives
credit, I think, to the method. So, in cases where we cannot really compare so easily to the exact problem.
Yeah. Yes?
I have a physics question about nanotubes, because nanotubes, the Luttinger liquid exponent is itself dependent on the size of our
angle. Yeah, because of logarithmic t.
I mean, it's also logarithmically increasing here, so what's.
Yeah, but this is a very different effect. In nanotubes take an unscreened Coulomb interaction, which has this logarithmic dependence with Q, so which you cut off is so. So in a sense, if you would have an infinitely long real Karman nanotube, you wouldn't even have a Luttinger liquid, but you'd have something worse because your exponent goes to infinity.
So now if you want to compare or to measure nanotubes of different sizes, then what would be the contribution of the kind of effects you're describing here and the contribution of the fact that the exponent is itself?
As we are not close to this question, but still working with this, including spin and in the local interaction, we really haven't thought about it, but this is certainly a very good point. Yeah.
Can you give some intuition how the Hartree-Fock calculation produces the power law? Because at first sight, it seems surprising. It seems to me like all the RG does is some minor changes makes the interaction get corrected, but the heart of the result is already at the Hartree-Fock level.
Yes.
And it should be.
As I told you, the Hartree-Fock already gives you this long-range oscillatory potential, and. If you look at this is so it fits to the toy model, and in the toy model I showed you explicitly that you get this power law suppression.
I see.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's basically because if you're just happening in 1D is a very singular thing.
Yes. So this is really if it would be a faster decay than this 1 over x, so the beta would be larger than 0, then you know would no longer have the suppression. So.
But somehow everything is encoded in the G matrix causes the impurity scattering. What your Hartree calculation, Hartree-Fock calculation does is to couple some single object with the scattering theory with the Hartree-Fock diagram.
Yeah, but you have to be really careful. If you do the thing and do it. Compare the Hartree-Fock and the RG calculation and look at the exponents, you get for positive values of U, let's say take the green one is the RG and the black one is the Hartree-Fock calculation. So the exponents differ a little bit, but more or less you get the physics right. But if you look at U equals minus 1, then the Hartree-Fock, first, if I would take a smaller U, it first seems to get a positive exponent, but then it gives you a completely nonsensical answer, so that again, your density of states goes to 0. While in the exact calculation for attractive U, you would get a divergence in the density of states. So if you make the U rather small, then for not too large system, it looks as if you get a power law increase, but then on very small scales, it really goes to 0. So miraculously, the RG does it all beautifully, as expected. Yeah. So these calculations were done for the boundary. So there, the strength of the impurity in both cases is infinite. So this is the pure boundary case. Then there's much easier. This is the most favorite way to compare them. Okay. Maybe we just switch.
That's yours. It's also yours. Okay, so this second talk, which I will try to keep within half an hour, really, I promise, has two aspects. One is a funny instability, which came out, or the first hint towards it came out from these renormalization group calculations for the two-dimensional Hubbard model. And the second is about a very simple and very old model, a method which strangely has not been applied so much and which is very efficient in the question I'm discussing here. So physically, the discussion is about symmetry breaking Fermi surface deformation. You all know that switching on interactions in some Fermi system, usually the Fermi surface gets deformed, except in the isotropic case, of course. And what is peculiar here is that there are in the 2D Hubbard model, in a situation where the non-interacting Fermi surface is close to the Van Hove singularities, such that their Fermi surface comes close to the Van Hove points in K-space, there is a tendency towards deformations of the Fermi surface which break the square lattice symmetry down to some smaller symmetry. So there's maybe some preferred orientation in the system. And that something like that might happen came out first, as I said already, from renormalization group calculations published 2 years ago together with a former PhD student. Actually, I brought some white chalk for safety. Christoph Halbert. Published in PRL 2 years ago, which was about a recoupling renormalization group stability analysis of the Hubbard model, where one of the main focuses was D-wave superconductivity, which can be obtained in a controlled way at recoupling by these methods, as we heard yesterday by Manfred. But sort of as a byproduct, we observed also a tendency towards these Fermi surface deformations, which might break symmetry. And the hint towards something like that came out by looking at the effective interactions we compute by the flow in the forward scattering channel. So since in the RG you compute the whole interaction vertex all over the Fermi surface, you get the Cooper channel, you get your Umklapp scattering, you also can extract the forward scattering interactions, and one gets directly the flowing Landau function, FKK prime. And this is a picture where I show just these Landau functions, where the upper curve is one where one of the momenta is sitting on one Van Hove singularity and the other close to the other, and this gets strongly repulsive, while the Landau function between momenta on a common Van Hove point gets strongly attractive, which is, by the way, something one can also understand already within second order perturbation theory. And you may define a Fermi surface susceptibility, which tells you how sensitive the Fermi surface becomes then towards small perturbations, where generalizing the usual compressibility, where you add some homogeneous chemical potential and then get some volume change, you can also imagine putting some K-dependent chemical potential into the system and then look at shifts at the Fermi surface in all types of different places. And this gives a matrix, and you can analyze its eigenvalues. And if this thing becomes very big in certain eigenvector channels, then this signals an instability of the Fermi surface, which in the isotropic case has been studied already in the early literature. In particular, Pomeranchuk has given a general stability criterion for Fermi liquids in the isotropic case, where things decouple in angular momenta, and he has written down the stability criterion that FL should be larger than minus 2L plus 1, otherwise you encounter some instability. Special cases are, of course, phase separation, which is in the channel F0 symmetric, or ferromagnetism in the channel F0 antisymmetric. But okay, there may be more subtle types of instabilities of this type, and we speak about Pomeranchuk instability here just because Pomeranchuk pointed out this stability criterion very early, that is in the 50s, I guess. So yeah, that was the isotope. Yeah, well, if you don't break any symmetry, you won't get. Of course, also you can consider in the isotropic case the unlikely situation where somehow the lambda parameters assume such extreme values that you might have some symmetry breaking Fermi surface deformation also in the isotropic case. I don't do this, but Kivelson, Emery et al. Have done this recently. There is a publication 1 year ago where they consider such type of instabilities in the isotropic case. And they speak about pneumatic electron liquids in this context. I think it's unlikely that something like that happens in isotropic Fermi systems in nature, maybe already for the fact that there are not so many isotropic Fermi liquids in nature. We have helium-3 and we have something far away from the Earth, and so helium-3 doesn't do this. And okay, of course in models you can always put your parameters such that this happens, but I think the more interesting issue is whether something like that can happen in an anisotropic Fermi system where you have the reduced rotation symmetry in the lattice, that is square lattice symmetry, and whether you can break this already quite small symmetry group down to some smaller values. Okay. Well, looking again at this Landau parameter, so what the picture is, just as an idea so far, is the following. We get computing our flow or computing somehow our Landau function. We get strong repulsion between quasi-particles here and here, while some attraction between quasi-particles sitting close to a common Van Hove singularity. And so it's from both point of view, it may be advantages for the quasi-particles to, or to the electrons to fill K-space in a different way, having some depletion, say, here and putting in electrons here, thus breaking the tetragonal symmetry. Okay, at the same time our paper appeared, by the way, these people in Japan have considered a similar possibility, arriving at it first from photo emission data and then analyzing in mean field slave boson theory the TJ model. Now, the RG, as you heard also yesterday, gives you some signals of possible instabilities. And this Fermi surface deformation competes with other instabilities, which are certainly there. And in particular, if you move away from half filling and go to sufficiently weak coupling, the only other instability which competes with that is the D-wave superconductivity, because you have always the logarithm in the Cooper channel, so superconductivity is always an issue, as we know since Kohn and Luttinger in the mid-60s. And in contrast to the isotropic case, in three dimensions, the scales where the superconductivity occurs already at recoupling are not on 10 to the minus 17 or something like that, Kelvin, but reasonably high. 12? Okay, I am sorry. But still not measurable, I would say. Okay, so at this point, we face the problem. We would, what we wanted to learn is between these two competing instabilities, say, or which might also coexist, D-wave superconductivity and this Fermi surface deformation, will we just get superconductivity? And the problem is that opening a gap right at the Van Hove points, this might kill the other effect. That was sort of the problem we could not clarify by this calculation starting from the normal phase. So we needed a calculation which, within the symmetry broken phase, taking into account both Fermi surface deformations and superconductivity. And here comes this very old method into play, which as an idea goes back to Nozier, which is very simple conceptually and also numerically. And it's so simple that I can explain it at the blackboard really in 5 to 10 minutes in a way that you really understand how it's done. So it's very simple and has not been applied as far as I know. Is there some possibility to have light on the blackboard? This one?
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, that sounds, looks good. So maybe I, and can I, without destroying something, how should I just turn this off? Can I turn it on later? Ah, yeah, okay, that's a brutal way. So, you may already have the Hubbard model in your mind. So I have a kinetic energy part, H naught, and some interaction part, Hi, which is just the Hubbard interaction. And I'm doing perturbation theory. Now, the most naive perturbation theory expands around this bare kinetic energy, H naught, and you have the problem that the Fermi surface is not in its right place, and this produces all sorts of problems. If you go to sufficiently high order, you will find divergent diagrams, or you may find anomalous diagrams, possibly all these problems also with the zero temperature limit is linked to that. And in order to get a better behaved perturbation theory, the idea, which as far as I know goes back to Nozier, is to add a counter term which brings the Fermi surface already in its right place, which you don't know, of course, ahead, but you can compute it then self-consistently. Okay, before I start doing this, I would like also to mention the student who collaborated in this, who has been very efficient, especially with the numerics that comes with this scheme, but also contributed several ideas, Arne Neumeier. So, as I said, I add here such a counter term, and in order not to change the model, I subtract it again. And this counter term, just talking so far about the normal phase, just shifts the dispersion relation. So it's a term, sum over k, sum over sigma, delta, xi k, n k sigma. Such that this h naught plus k becomes a h naught twiddle. And since I have not changed the model, I get some interaction Hi twiddle. And I will try then to choose this shift such that the Fermi surface coming with this new dispersion relation, Xi k twiddle equal to the bare one, and here the chemical potential is already subtracted, plus this shift, this thing will have some Fermi surface, F twiddle, and I want to choose this thing such that this interaction part, which now consists of a usual Hubbard interaction minus this quadratic counter term, this should not change this Fermi surface anymore. Okay. Okay. Now, if I set up perturbation theory for the self energy, I first define the new shifted self-energy, which is given by the difference between the new Baer-Green function coming with this H-twiddle minus the full Green function I'm going to compute. And this thing has a perturbation expansion where I just write my usual diagrams where I just have to take into account that now I have two types of vertices. One is coming with this interaction, which is a four fermion thing, and this is a two fermion thing. And I start writing first order, I get these two, and at second order, I get this, I get this, and I get this. Okay, plus higher order. All right. And as I said, this choice of counter terms should be such that this interaction doesn't change the Fermi surface anymore. And this gives me a self-consistency condition, namely this self-energy taken at zero frequency and taken on vectors of the new Fermi surface should vanish. And if I do this, I get immediately a nicely behaved perturbation expansion in the sense that all sort of anomalous diagrams will disappear. And also, I won't find divergences having to do with too many self-energy insertions in a given place. And by the way, this sort of scheme has been applied to clarify in much more detail these issues about the zero temperature limit, which are discussed in many of the old textbooks still, by various mathematicians, including Manfred Salmhofer, who is here, Horst Knörrer, I think, and Eugene Turbowitz. So they have really done the necessary analysis to establish these things in a more rigorous way for a big class of physical systems. So I'm using this here just as a way to compute things. So this is how we get our Fermi surface deformation in principle. Then now I just generalize this slightly by adding, since I want to include also superconductivity, so I add also a counter term which includes superconductivity already in the quote bare Hamiltonian H naught twiddle. So I add some second counter term, some k delta k c k up c minus k down plus emission conjugate. Put this also here, subtract it here, and then going to a Nambu representation, you just write the same diagrams, and now you have to remember that here on these lines of these diagrams, of course, they all the time appear these twiddle green functions, which are now number of green functions involving the anomalous part also. Okay. That's basically the scheme. And we have the same self-consistency condition both for the normal and for the anomalous part of the self-energy now. That is, the counter term for this gap should be chosen such that this interaction part does not change this gap on the Fermi surface anymore. That's it. Okay. If I do this to first order, that is truncating here, I just get the BCS equation for that. Now I go to second order to include the fluctuations. Fluctuations usually have two aspects. One is that they can give rise to instabilities which are not there in bare mean field theory, just because fluctuations may create attractions in certain channels and then give rise to some instability. This is what happens here with the D-wave superconductivity. The other aspect of fluctuations is that it sometimes suppresses also order, which might be there already in the bare mean field limit. And a sort of perturbation theory within ordered phases that is in many respects similar to this has been performed already 10 years ago, roughly, by Antoine Georges and Yedidia. The spirit is a bit different, but the goal is also to perform perturbation theory in the presence of order, including fluctuations, and they start from a free energy function calculated at some order parameter and then minimizing with respect to that order parameter, and they obtained, for example, this reduction of order parameters under including fluctuations in case of magnetism and so on. Okay, now here the main goal was now to study this competition or coexistence between superconductivity and the Fermi surface deformation. So in order to do this in practice, now you have to write down really the diagrams. An advantage with respect to fully self-consistent calculations where you put full propagators on the line and then forget about all self-energy insertions here is that you can do the Matsubara frequencies analytically, so which saves you a lot of computational time, so we can study also more, say, delicate instabilities. And also, well, we know by now that the fully self-consistent scheme has its problems. So here we have just as much self-consistency as we need to remove the singularities and to establish a better starting point. And I think this is actually the logic one should follow in the long run. Bame Cardanoff has more self-consistently than is actually needed, I would say, for certain things. And this is at least easier numerically, let's put it that way. And if carried out order by order, also you would recover certainly the usual conservation laws. There's another comment here. All this could also in principle be done within the renormalization group. We haven't implemented that yet, but this idea expanding around a shifted starting point to put in symmetry breaking can obviously also be carried out within the RG. We just now then talk about actions, and instead of expanding around the kinetic energy part of the action, you put in some counter term, subtract, and then let your flow go and put the self-consistency condition that you don't like to have your order parameters changed anymore. So this is also a neat, nice idea to put in order parameters, but there are also other ways there, as pointed out by Manfred a little bit yesterday already. Okay, so that's a...
I think it would really be used in RG to push the flows beyond the region where the...
Yeah. So if you put in the right type of symmetry breaking, and let's talk about the ground state. At finite temperature, you get difficulties because you may not have really symmetry breaking. Then it's really necessary to put in some fluctuating Bose field and not just this. But if you would like sort of to compute just the superconducting order parameter in the ground state now, starting from RG, you would do just this and then let your flow go. And what would happen is that the Cooper couplings at a certain stage would, of course, become still not small, but they won't diverge anymore, I think. And he will just go into some fixed point. And
it'd be nice to test that in a very simple model where there is a divergence of the arch flow.
Yeah, I think we'll do that quite soon. So this RG thing has many ways to be extended. And
I make this remark. This has been done by Feldman and Tubowitz back in 1992. There is, however, the additional problem that if perfectly breaks the symmetry, you get a cold stop.
Which is the equation rather than?
Well,
the U1.
The U1.
Yeah.
And then they follow a flow, and they have this gap equation. And then you can hope that the flow won't go to start coupling anymore, but you still have the force on, so you still have the singularity.
Yeah, which is however physical, I would say. Yes. So it's a singularity in the vertex, which is there, but which is much weaker than the one we get here. And so it doesn't couple back too strongly, so everything. So it's something that is, in a sense, integral. It doesn't destroy everything else, right?
Just wanted to mention
and one should get it. Okay, where's the pointer? All right, now I just have still one remark about the implementation. So this self-consistency condition fixes the counter terms only on the Fermi surface. But of course, in computing these diagrams, you need to know somehow also what they are away from the Fermi surface. And here you have some freedom. You can just continuously extend the counter terms somehow away from the Fermi surface. And there are very many ways to do this. We choose just to let the counter terms have arbitrary values on the Fermi surface, but then continued it constantly along these lines in the first quarter of the Brillouin zone. This is just one possible parametrization. What counts is just what the counter terms have to be on the Fermi surface, and you need some continuity, of course. That's just a technical point. And now I come already to the results. So. Obviously, the self-consistency equation is a nonlinear equation for the counter terms, so both for the Fermi surface shift or for the shift of dispersion relation and the superconducting order parameter. So we compute both by iteration. And in all cases studied so far, we obtained just one stable fixed point of the iteration procedure. And some results for parameters, I hope you can see if I write it here. U is equal to 3 times hopping, and there is a T prime in the system, which is minus 0.15, which leads to Fermi surfaces which look roughly like this. And the densities I consider here are chosen such that the Fermi surface is close to the Van Hove points, and they run from 0.88 up to 0.9. And somehow the labels here got lost on this way of transforming a PS file, which was still okay, to slides here in this institute, where I had to transform them first to the Acrobat reader, then I had to put them up to the Macintosh, and then I plotted, and unfortunately, and I don't know why, these sort of survived and these are gone. So the density here is just 1 per mil over this, so it's a 9 instead of the 8 here. So these are points where transition goes on, as I explained a second, and here it's 0.9. So sorry, you have to remember that. Okay. Let's first have a look at the figure up there. This is just the superconducting order parameter for the two densities shown here as a function of polar angle in the system. And you see nicely the D-wave structure. And you see also that, of course, the peaks are at the Van Hove points. Okay, there's not much more to say. Yeah, there is something more to say. The scale. So U is equal to 3, and the order parameter is .01 in units of the hopping. This is roughly one order of magnitude smaller than what we get from the RG calculation, where we estimate if we estimate the order parameter by the scale where the couplings take off. There are three reasons to that. The most important one, I think, is that the RG captures better the enhancement of effective interactions in the pi-pi momentum transferring channels. Because here, we just put the bare interactions in our second order diagram. So in this sense, it's something like a Kuhn-Luttinger type calculation. While the RG manages to treat the self-enhancement, so to speak, of the effective interaction in the pi-pi channel due to spin fluctuations. This is something the RG captures, and this raises somewhat the scale. Okay, there are two minor other possibilities, which I'm not going to discuss, but they are discussed in our paper. So, more sort of excitingly, maybe, now looking at the Fermi surfaces, we get here at 0.9 a symmetric Fermi surface, as you see, while going to lower densities, we find, for example, something like this, which obviously breaks the square lattice symmetry, and also it changes the topology. As you see, it's open orbits here instead of closed ones, which is a funny situation. Okay, here you see how the transition goes on. This is still open orbits. There's also, if at this density, you can have closed orbits, that is around pi pi, but still the symmetry breaking. So this is the only stable solution we get from the iterative solution of this self-consistent set of equations, which came up from some weak coupling calculation with this procedure. This is what you get. Okay. Well, of course, with such a nonlinear system, you are never absolutely sure. But of course, we tried sort of to choose different starting points. And what we checked, of course, is whether the symmetric solutions are really unstable. And they are in this situation. So if you put in some little asymmetry, then this gets enhanced until you reach this situation. Okay, this is what happens. So it's sort of as safe as the solution of a gap equation, I would say. Okay, it's a nonlinear system of equation, but the situation looks fairly stable in the sense that we always found one unique solution which got stabilized, and the symmetric solution in these cases was always unstable. Okay. Yeah, I have no data on that yet. All this is computationally, okay, cheap compared to other methods, but still takes some time. But it's clear that if you go to sufficiently low density, then you will recover the symmetric situation with a Fermi surface close around zero then. Yeah, it should happen quite probably. Well, I don't know precisely where it happens. Certainly, if you go to 0 to 8.6 or so, you will be probably there already. So the window, of course, this is a weak coupling. So if you go to stronger coupling, the window might be bigger. You may speculate, I don't know. Of course, the trend is that if you go to weaker coupling, all the scales for instabilities get smaller. And what we checked already, by the way, I have no transparency here so far. If you go to a smaller U, something like 2.3, the gap for the superconducting order parameter decreases more rapidly than the energy scale that leads to these Fermi surface deformations. So it seems that this thing really survives in the weak coupling limit, and in this sense is a seems to be a controlled result, really. Okay, so this is what the calculation is. Okay, we have also done something for the attractive Hubbard model, just establishing this reduction of the gap parameter, but that's not so exciting. So it seems that at weak coupling, this instability is really there. And at this point, you can just point, let me just point out one thing I started to discuss here at the workshop with Claudio Castellani. This is a transition with a discrete symmetry breaking, which happens in some interval in density around the Van Hove filling. And now if you go, let me plot here temperature and here 1 minus density. So this is half filling here. And here we got somewhere this Van Hove thing. And there is this window where in the ground state we find the symmetry breaking. Now, since we break a discrete symmetry here, it's clear that this thing will extend somewhat in finite temperature. So you may get a regime like this. And the superconductivity is somewhere around here or maybe higher up. This I can't tell at present. But what is interesting is where the transition occurs, of course, you get a quantum critical point, which is very fashionable these days. And Phil Anderson doesn't like it very much. But these things, there's a quant-mut about quantum critical point, a very bad fashion of the new century or something like that. But OK, anyway, here one would get quantum critical points. And now at this point, you can discuss sort of fluctuations of the Fermi surface, which become very strong in the vicinity of this instability. And these fluctuations have much in common with other types of quantum critical points, of course. In particular, it's very easy to get, during these fluctuations, self-energy, which has this very singular behavior. In fact, if you compute it, it's very similar to the situation in the gauge theories. It's a small q phenomenon here. It's small q that are the dominant fluctuations. And due to this D-wave structure of this instability, this singular part of the self-energy has some k-dependent form factor. So if you make a simple picture, the fluctuations are particularly big here, then they basically vanish here and then become bigger here. And this reminds one, of course, of many things that have been done phenomenologically in the literature, for example, by Joff and Millis, this cold spot thing, as Claudio pointed out to me. So this is certainly something one might investigate a bit more in detail, at least within the Hubbard model. Whether this is then relevant or not for the cuprates remains to be seen. Probably it is not. But OK, maybe that's a good point to stop. Thanks.
Yeah. The counterterms.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're not completely defined; they're only defined on the temperature.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh.
Gives me an uncomfortable feeling. Should I not be uncomfortable?
No, you shouldn't. So the point is, I just need that the self-energy vanishes on the Fermi surface. And it's sufficient to have it vanish, say, linearly with distance. In order to compensate the corresponding pole, you have in the propagators. And for the rest, it's sort of the position of the Fermi surface does not depend on how you choose.
That this is correct. I'm just
we're questioning a procedure in which you introduce something that is not really fully well defined.
But it's well defined.
I mean, for example, if one approaches this same problem as Lawrence and I did by going to finite temperatures, then you don't have this. And that strikes me, therefore, I'm more comfortable with that. I don't have these. The expansion that you will get from this kind of normalization rotation expansion will, of course, depend on how you introduce.
Okay, so two answers to that. One, staying for the moment in the zero temperature thing, if you look at this, and if we continue this, say, constantly away from the Fermi surface, as soon as you move far away from the Fermi surface, what this is precisely doesn't matter very much, because this becomes much bigger. And the same with the superconducting gap, right? If you write your Vogel-Yubov thing, very soon, this part becomes much bigger than that, and so it doesn't matter very much how you continue this far away from the Fermi surface. So, okay, about finite temperature, of course, it's true that there I'm not even obliged to do something particularly on the Fermi surface. I have some freedom in a sense also there, but there I would just continue in temperature just the way I do here in normal k-space coordinates. That is, I would just require that going into the zero temperature limit, I should have this precise condition. And going away, I have some freedom, and I would use this freedom just for technical, making it technically simple. The important thing is just to cancel the singularity.
That's it. The end results of slightly different if you take different procedures?
Well, we haven't tried different procedures, but it's clear that it will not affect the qualitative results, of course. And the quantitative change must be very small.
Yeah, but the fact you see there is, I don't know, it's a matter of taste. I prefer the systematic procedure that's unique.
Well, it's okay, it's unique in the sense solving the singularity problem and the rest.
I can make a comment on this remark. I think there is a way to actually expand and give a precise meaning to delta psi everywhere, not only on the time scale space. Actually, the way I would do it is to construct a functional of nk sigma, the one electron distribution function, and then find the boundaries of the system by minimizing this functional, which will give you presumably a unique answer and specify where the time scale is. And then the delta psi is just the Relevant multiplier that will introduce to constrain it in this sigma in that functional, some sort of generalized potential
potential if you want.
And then
it's defined
everywhere, not only on the temperature. So one can formulate this as a functional of NK sigma. You don't use
our
at zero temperature. And then it's defined everywhere.
Yeah, but
you need to know it only on the temperature.
Logically, I just don't see the necessity. I just want to have a nice perturbation expansion, but without singularities. I want to treat the singularities, and for the rest, maybe a matter of taste.
It's actually the delta psi k is defined everywhere. And you can show that you can do this procedure to all of these interpretation theory. They will also allow you to do this. We have written a paper.
It can be evaluated to all the same way that was done.
Right, but the diagram,
sure, the diagrammatic rules for it are more complicated.
Well, of course, from this I could still compute sort of the dispersion relation of the interacting system by looking for zeros in the real part of the green function, say, and this dispersion relation I would get is of course not equal to this one everywhere, but I can compute it order by order in a controlled fashion, I would say. But in your procedure, what gives a unique criterion for how to choose this?
Well, I mean, as I said, the depth of psi is defined everywhere, and of course it is true that you just take some, let's say, vector field transversal to the thermal surface to continue the depth of psi to all of the momentum space.
Mm-hmm.
Principally, you have a dependence on that vector field. But then one can show by proving the so-called inversion theorem that you have a unique correspondence between the interacting and the free Fermi surface, and things don't depend on this choice.
And the
inversion theorem is just the existence of the
Legendre transform. No, it's not. The existence of the Legendre transform. The inversion theorem is actually something pretty non-trivial. It is the statement that really you start with a non-interacting system, and you can say what the Fermi surface of the interacting system is, and under certain conditions it is regular, and it of course deforms, but the deformation is regular. Right? You could think you might have singularities in there. Can show that all this doesn't happen if you're away from the
Fermi surface. Mm-hmm. And the Fermi surface does not depend on how you precisely continue your counter terms away. Yeah, that was maybe the question about, right? Right? So maybe I didn't understand. I just wanted to have a scheme where I can compute the interacting Fermi surface.
Can I ask you this question? So here there is about the beginning of the observation. If I use the different continuation away from the Fermi surface, is this perturbation expansion term by term independent of how I do it? And I think not.
It might make order by order make little changes if you continue differently. Okay, and the other terms might depend a little bit on how you do it. So only summing up the whole series, you would get the unique result.
If you ask order by order, it is not because the inversion. Is not something you can do order by order, because of course you're putting things into a denominator, and if you can't re-expand it order by order, because you get back the problem you want to avoid. So as if you regard it now as a function of u, then this inversion tells you that in the end your physical quantities do not depend on how you expand.
Ole had a question.
I understand from that point of view that this is a discussion of whether this is a realistic theory for that of a transport. And as I can hear you are discussing, I mean, it is no wonder if you see very close to a conformal singularity of some temperature, something that I have to think about singularity. And the question you're discussing, as far as I understand, what are the leading instabilities, what's going to happen, you're saying that people have symmetry plates like this, which I would understand as a chapter.
It's not the same thing. So it's in the charge channel, but it doesn't come with the breaking of translation invariance. So in this sense, and from a symmetry breaking point of view, it's equivalent to this pneumatic electron liquid discussed by Kivelson, Emery, and Fredkin, And they discussed this, by the way, I forgot to tell you, in the lattice case, they gave a qualitative discussion about electron crystal liquid phases, so to speak, pneumatic, smectic, and all that, in the case of a two-dimensional system on a lattice, just discussing that as possibilities. Here we find that in a controlled recoupling calculation, we actually get such a pneumatic phase. And okay, this is maybe what is new about it.
Okay. Yeah, when it comes to that kind of time, the calling electron theory.
Uh-huh.
But the time seems that there are less.
Yeah.
The
yeah, yeah.
The so-called built up the
mm-hmm.
phase.
Right, yeah.
And the high temperatures are built up the also wrong.
Mm-hmm.
This so-called low-temperature tetrahedral phase, that's exactly that will produce microscopically also longer.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that the oxygen makes it water in all cases, but there are rows where the oxygens are thin. That means that the hopping in the exploration is different from the hopping in the right.
Yeah, which is happening here. Yeah, yeah, it's like this. And of course, on top of that, you can have also transitions which break also translation invariance. So on top of this, you might have something that leads to strife, say. And Kivelsen et al. Discussed also such a transition from a pneumatic to a smectic phase, and they relate that also to stripes. I had no time here to deal with all these speculations. Yeah, sure, it couples to the lattice, and and exploring this is certainly very interesting. So, sure. Okay, thank you very much.